Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's Robbie and Rex Road with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rex Road on Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
1025 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
And welcome into the Friday edition of Robbie and Rex Road. I'm Joe Rex Road here with the great, the venerable, the legendary Mark Howard in for Robbie. Ryan Porth producing. Robbie, still glamping in the Grand Canyon. By the way, did you see any? Robbie tweeted an amazing picture of the Grand Canyon. You guys see that?
And he put some photos on his Insta.
Oh, Insta. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, if you're on Insta, Mark, you on the Insta?
I am not on the Insta.
I am not either. I will never be on the Insta.
Never?
I don't think so.
My kids are on the Insta.
Yeah. I don't, like, okay, it's more visual, right? That's my understanding. It's more visual. So it revolves around pictures and videos. But you can do pictures and videos on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
So, I'm sure it's nicer, I guess, like the pictures are prettier, but... Is it really?
You can have filters on Insta. You know, you can make them look better than what they actually turned out on your camera.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's fine. But I still, to me, it's like, it's overkill. How long have you been on Twitter, Mark?
Oh, gosh. Almost from the...
From the get-go?
Yeah.
Okay. I was a resister of Twitter. So I got on in the fall of 2011. I remember I got on the week. That year was the week of the Michigan State football game, which I covered Michigan State. And it was like this. I mean, it was a running joke on the beat and, like, you know, and message boards. Like, yeah, why Twitter? Twitter's ridiculous. And then, of course, I was like, God, I'm dumb. That was stupid. I should have been on all along. But I feel like all these other ones are just,
And you're not on Facebook either, Joe, right?
I am on Facebook because my wife started an account on Facebook for me, but I don't go there.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about you?
First of all, my sort of philosophy of life is that if I do something, my first inclination is not to put it on social media.
Bless your heart. And I mean that seriously.
And when Twitter came out, I learned my lessons. I had my Twitter spats. It just got ridiculous after a while. So, yeah, I'm on Twitter when I have to be on Twitter. And I understood almost from the beginning that if you do what we do, you have to be on Twitter. It's not like everybody's on Twitter, but that's just, to me, that's almost a job requirement.
Sports media lives on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Instagram, occasionally. But, again, it's not the first thing I go to. It's not the first thing I read. But I understand that it's part of what we do.
Yeah, look, I agree. You have to interact with fans. And it's also sharing. I mean, I know, like, at The Athletic, I mean, early days, it was very much like, you know, this is how you tell people that this exists, you know, and tweet your stuff and talk about it and all that stuff. I mean, it's very important. And it's, to me, it is, I mean, Twitter is great as a news feed. You set up your own news feed, and now it's like you follow, you know, whatever organizations you want to follow news that's going on, and it's very handy. Which, by the way, yesterday on Twitter is where I learned that the Preds have a schedule.
Yes.
For the playoffs. How about that?
Hallelujah.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to see you saying hallelujah, Ryan Porth. You've handled this very well. Why don't you tell the people the potential conflict in your life?
Well, first of all, game one is Monday night, and it's a 7 o'clock Central start, so 8 o'clock Eastern. I was a little surprised to see that. So all the pregame coverage here on ESPN 102.5, the game starting at 6. So they go every other day in the series. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday next week for the first four games, which means game 7, if necessary, falls on my wedding day.
Yeah. Well, that's on you, pal.
That's got to be a drop.
that's on you. Now, I remember, you know, getting married the week of the Tennessee-Florida game. But I knew exactly what the deal was.
Sure.
But, you know, you carry a lot of responsibility.
A little bit. So that is definitely going to be a conundrum for the next couple of weeks of what is going to happen. So hopefully the Preds just get it done in six. They don't need a seventh game to beat Carolina.
What about your honeymoon?
That is still scheduled for the week after Memorial Day. So after the Preds beat the Canes, you know, the first week of round two.
You're not. You can't opt out of the honeymoon.
Spoken like a true program director.
I can't opt out of the honeymoon.
Yeah. When you say, you say that's still scheduled. That you got to stick with that, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no looking back on the money that we spent for the Airbnb for Florida.
I mean, look, if they beat the Canes, you're going to miss part of the next round. That's not a big deal.
It's a big deal to me.
Yeah, well, okay, but in the bigger picture, right?
Sure.
Got to keep the big picture in mind, which also social media sometimes makes difficult to do. Well, that's so here's the scenario that I'm interested in. Preds down 3-2. Battling for their playoff lives in a game 6.
Yes.
Which very much is in the realm of possibility.
Could absolutely be on the table.
Yeah.
What an interesting night of the household that could be, huh?
Well, and there was an interesting discussion last night of Amanda saying, hey, Nana and her friend are going to be in town on Thursday. Can we do a dinner with the entire family? And I looked at her and I said, well, you know, that is the night of game 6 at home.
I'll tell you, that's why there's early bird specials.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're going to be looking over somebody's shoulder.
Exactly.
An awful lot.
Exactly. And she said, you don't need to be there. I said, okay.
Oh, that's okay. That's a good sport.
That is a good sport.
That is a good sport, man. Well, yeah, it's the finally the games we know that they're happening. And I will say that when I saw it come out, I wondered why that had to wait. Because I know there's other things that are either or, right? But
not anymore. But at the time that they released the schedule,
it was either or.
It was either or. And I agree with you. It was like, okay, well, if it was either or, then why didn't you just put this out yesterday?
Right. Is just because it was an afterthought, I guess?
They
finally heard enough people complaining about the lack of schedule, and they said, okay, we'll just put this out.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Now, for Willie, it's a little bit of a different deal because local TV only gets the first round.
Correct.
And I remember that used to – that kind of bummed me out. I remember, especially in 2017, they win the Chicago series and we're pretty much done.
Was it that way in 2011 when they beat Anaheim and then played Vancouver in round two?
Yeah.
It was always just the first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like NBA has – some of the local deals go two rounds, but –
Really?
I think they have in the past.
But. Well, Willie also has a conundrum on the potential day of Game 7, which is his daughter's high school graduation.
Yes. Yes.
And he has a bunch of family in town that weekend. So
his plan that day was graduation day, your wedding night?
He wasn't going to be able to attend the wedding.
I gotcha. Okay.
So, yeah. He's also got, I mean, he clearly cannot get out of that. He would have to miss some sort of celebration for his daughter.
So he needs a night game if it's a game 7. We were talking about that before the show, you know, the idea of if it's a, could it possibly be a day game?
But if it's on national NBC, I don't think they have TV for that or local TV.
Yeah.
If it is the big game. NBC.
Thing about Willie, though, is he married incredibly well.
Yes.
I've known Erin since they were college students, and she knows what the deal is, and nobody could be more supportive.
Yeah, well, in 2017, so this is my – well, actually, I was able to cover the Preds right when I started the Tennessean in 16, but in 17, we had two trips – they weren't big trips, but they were scheduled later, February, March time period. And in fact, one of them was absolutely scheduled when the playoff pairings came out because I told my wife, like, yeah, they're not going to beat the Blackhawks, so you can go ahead and do that.
Nah, they won't beat the Blues, yeah.
Yeah, well, after that, it was all open season. But I actually went to Florida with her because we met some of our friends like from Michigan. It was like a couples thing, and then like red eye to Pittsburgh for game one. You know, like I had to cut it short still, but I kind of like still snuck it in. But that was a good lesson learned. If you ever say a team is oh, no, they're not going to do this, or they're not going to do that. I've done it. It's happened in the NCAA tournament, too. Yeah, you are going to. It's going to happen.
Oh, I remember one year, Vandy was in the NIT, back when that was important. And I'm sitting there playing Southern Miss, and I needed for them to lose because I was going on a trip with my buddies. And they were down by like 27 early in the second half. And they almost came back. And there's nothing worse than covering the NIT. It is.
NIT. Was that Willie? Did Willie hit any jumpers in that game?
That was a little bit after Willie.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's funny how the NIT
sucks the life out of you.
The NIT. Oh, man. Yeah. On the Preds front, Victor Arvidsson practicing. John Hines not committing to anything. And I guess why would you? You know?
Yeah.
Why I say anything? But Victor Arvidsson practicing right now fully, that seems to be a pretty good indication that he's going to be in that lineup Monday, which pretty significant, should be significant. The Preds hope it's significant.
I love the fact that The Athletic, of course, Joe Rex wrote, a prominent writer and columnist on that staff, pretty much did a breakdown of the tiers of NHL playoff teams. The Predators basically got and they're in this too.
I missed that.
I mean, there was sort of a detailed breakdown of just about every team, their strengths, their weaknesses. You know, why the Islanders are going to get underplayed coming in because they've been 30th in the NHL in offense over the last 30 games. With the Predators, yeah, they're in this too.
Well, it was wasn't it a tier of Stanley Cup contenders?
Yeah,
as final tier,
as voted on by like some executives and you know, coaches anonymously, obviously, and in a tier on by themselves, it was tier 5 Nashville Predators.
Really, I missed that. I'll have to check that out. Well, that goes right in line. You know, the Athletic the Titans were ranked 20th in the power poll. Also, by the way, Aaron Reese, you know, friend of the show, covers the Texans for us. So we did the people who covered the different divisions voted on who ranked them. He picked the Jags to be second and the Titans third in the division this year.
Wow. I saw the Colts got picked over the Titans.
Yeah, it would have been a tie except for Aaron's vote. So there you go. Yep. Lots of disrespect.
Come on,
coming
dude.
From my other employer. So, all right. Well, when we come back, we're going to get into the Preds. We're going to talk a little bit about a really good Matthias Ekholm interview yesterday, and on his thoughts on the trade deadline, and Mark's thoughts on what that means, what they did, and what must happen to justify what they did. When we come back on Robbie and Rex Road here at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Welcome back, Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road, Mark Howard, Ryan Porth producing, talking some Preds, and the trade deadline, Mark Howard. I'd like to get your thoughts. We're going to hear from Matthias Ekholm. He had a good interview with Jared Stillman. Compliment from me to Jared on the show, by the way, for the record. By the way... Man, we played it so many times. The draft night the draft night audio of them picking Caleb Farley and your I assume you were laughing at Jared's reaction.
Yes. I've just never seen anybody go out on the ledge like he did. I mean, and believe me, I mean, I passionately care about what the Titans do. But I had to hide the sharp objects when they made a shaky pick.
Oh, and then, like, the immediate, what was it? Like, immediately he's like, if this doesn't work out, he is fired. Like, I want to react first. Oh, that's good stuff. That is good stuff. But Jared had a very good interview with Matthias Ekholm yesterday. And one of the things they talked about was, you know, dealing with the trade rumors, because I'm always fascinated by that. Like, what happens in a household? You don't know what's going to happen. It could happen at any moment. But if it's speculation for weeks, like, do you start looking at, like, schools and, you know, and houses in some of these potential landing spots, things like that? But Matthias Ekholm had some interesting things to say on that.
It was not a first, but it was a new thing for me in my career. I've not been involved in a whole lot of trade rumors or trade talks whatsoever up until this point. But when things doesn't go your way or things doesn't go the way the team wants to, there's going to be consequences from that. So I understand all that business part of it. And it was hard in the beginning, seeing all that and hearing all that. It's hard to just kind of shut it down, so to speak. And I think it was me and my wife had this discussion about the whole thing, and it was like a month to go till the deadline, and we knew that if we keep playing bad, these rumors are just going to pile up. So there's no reason to even listen to them. Just kind of control what you can control. Go out there, play your game. But in this instance, in my game, just worry about that. Focus on that, and that's kind of the way I approached it. It sounds odd in the team sport, and everyone probably reads the articles, everybody sees all that, but sure. I never lost belief in this team. Like, I don't think the other guys did either. It was never a place or a time where we'd like discuss this as a possibility that I wouldn't stay here. And I think that's just what we did. We just stuck with it and controlled what we can control. And obviously we know, I believe in this group 110%, and I think we've really shown that as of late, and I'm really happy the way things turned out.
And Ekholm also talked, you know, about the, you know, the possibility of the extension, of course, which is coming up, and I would imagine quite a priority for David Poile. When he was number one, you know, there was like big board out there. We had that at the Athletic. Matthias Ekholm, number one on the big board of, you know, potential trade assets. What did you think at the time?
I thought that, and I understood that you can never speak in absolutes, you know, about a situation like this. But I sort of felt like it was incumbent upon David Poile to move this franchise forward, to maybe move some really good players, Grantland and Matty Ek especially, because they could have gotten, you know, a really good package of young players and draft picks. It sort of felt like, you know, they could go through sort of a soft rebuild, but get a lot of prospects, and let's see what happens. And I have to admit, I didn't love the fact that they stood pat, but I also understand the way they think. And I understand that they felt like, okay, this team, you know, might, you know, with some momentum, might do something in the postseason. I think they also felt like there'd be more than, you know, 6,000 people in the building. You know, there are revenue questions. You know, you get into a playoff, you get some home games. There was a lot of lost revenue during the year. I mean, in the NHL, ticket revenue is a much bigger priority than any of the other major sports. And that was something, you know, that was important. And I also think, too, and again, I sort of know the way they think, they became a cap team because they felt like they owed it to their season ticket holders and their fan base, you know, to go for it almost every year. So I understand their reluctance to blow the team up, and it was sort of the perfect storm. They got hot just when everybody thought that they were absolutely out of the playoffs. So did David do the right thing? Well, I think Steve Layman said it yesterday from News Channel 5. That's a question that'll be answered within the next, you know, 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, well, right. I mean, there's a long-term answer to that. In the short term, what would make you – like, what would, for you, make you feel like, okay – this maybe was the right choice. What would justify it in the short term? Is getting here enough?
Yeah, I guess. But I'll also tell you this, Joe, and you've been around this as long as I have. I sort of feel like they caught a flyer on this team. In other words, it's not like I'd go signing Eric Hall into a multi-year contract or Cousins or Richardson or any of these guys. I think they got a bunch of guys, a bunch of journeymen, who had their best years or who played their best for a very short amount of time. I think they've got to be careful, you know, in evaluating this team. And I was saying it long and loud after 2017, and that is, I thought it was dangerous for David to stand pat. Now, obviously, he had to unload Subban, but he essentially kept this team together, and I just don't think you can do that. So it'll be interesting to me to see how David proceeds. But I think that John Hines, I think what he got out of this is that he's got a coach, who deserves to be here at least, for the next few years. I think John Hines really showed why David wanted him to be the head coach here. I thought if they didn't make the playoffs, to me, all bets were off. As far as maybe David, as far as Hines, somebody had to take a hard look at this franchise. And then all of a sudden, the Preds started winning. Now, I also think there is, and I hope I'm wrong to a degree, I think there is some element of fool's gold in this. Remember who they beat. And this was an odd season because you only had teams playing within their division. And I just think that the schedule became the Predators' friend. As far as their turnaround was concerned. So I think there was some of that involved too.
Yeah, well, look, that's a fair point. I think a lot of people look at it that way. I mean, it's hard to argue when you look at their record versus the top three and then the other four. I think that's a great point about Hines. You know, I think one of the people who I think you have to have a different view on, although, I mean, I just thought it was ridiculous. People were talking about firing him anyway when it was going poorly. Yeah. I mean, the guy hasn't had a training camp yet. You know, the guy has not. I mean, and he came into when you come in midseason, that means, right, you're coming into a tough situation. The trajectory was not good when he took over. But I understand when, you know, he's not also as proven as some of the guys they could have hired.
Well, and that was the other thing. You know, I was shocked that David came to a decision as quickly as he did. And I sort of felt like if the team continued on its tailspin, to just sort of admit you made a mistake and go and make another hire. Obviously, John Hines has proven that he can get the job done. And you know, you can make the argument the Predators are probably – the least talented team top to bottom than any other team in the playoffs. And they're the beneficiaries of some great goaltending. But it just shows you, what Hines has done under difficult circumstances, that just when it looked like it was going south, you know, he put his head down and not only won, but won without some of his best players. You know, Yossi was out for a while, as you know, Duchesne, Forsberg, Arvidsson. And they were winning, so there is that.
Right. That's a good point. You know, I do think the youth move has been a big part of this season. And I think if you want to talk about what makes you feel good about the future and about maybe not having to have some massive rebuild, it's some of these guys. But some of them we wouldn't have seen.
Yeah, if some not of them we the wouldn't injury. Have seen. But what in reality is the youth movement?
Well, Tolvanen's a big one.
Tolvanen is. Fabro is.
I think Carrier this year has been one of the revelations. I mean,
but Carrier could be a guy who easily in 2 years, we could say that he was John Blum.
John Blum,
who had a who had a great short term run here. Great guy, had a great series against Anaheim, but the next year didn't play well. And eventually, sort of quietly, got moved off the roster. So I'm not and I could be wrong about Carrier. I still think Carrier is a third pair defenseman.
What about, Janot, Trenin, Olivier?
Trenin, I think, is a legitimate bottom six forward. Janot God bless them. Because around the league, I talked to people around the league and said that this guy was a ham and egger. You know, that, you know, a good effort guy in the AHL.
Yeah.
But he came up here and made the most of his opportunity, and he could be proving me wrong. I'm worried about more about Tomasino. I'm worried about the other young forwards. Yeah. What about those guys? You know, how are those guys going to contribute? We don't know yet. So as far as the youth movement, yeah, a little bit. I thought it was great that quietly they got Ferentz. I'm like one of those people like last year going, why did he go back to school? Well, you know, why isn't he here? I mean, there couldn't be a better opportunity for him here. And I said, maybe he and Favreau hate each other. I mean, I'm thinking of all these reasons why he didn't sign last year. But he did sign, and they got him, and that was quietly a really good addition for them.
I feel like that is a little bit of the Jimmy Vesey effect, too.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
The Preds being burned by him in the past and thinking, could this be Vesey 2.0?
And I just remember, I mean, they were literally shell-shocked when they didn't get Vesey. I mean, it was within the organization. They were just stunned, and all the signs were there. So they've gone down this path before. But anyway, I don't know if I would get all that excited about a youth movement. They found some role players. I don't know how good they're going to be in the next few years. Some of them are obviously going to stay here. And some of them are going to, you know, be the Freddie Gaudreau 2.0s.
Yeah, that's a great point. And we'll pick this back up on the other side. We're going to get a break. If you want to join in on this, call or text 615-737-1025. Text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And when we come back, we'll keep talking about this. Fool's Gold, youth movement. What's the future of this team look like, and what needs to happen to justify what David Poile did at the trading deadline? On Robbie and Rex, on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
How big of a shot in the arm was it when nobody was traded at the deadline, when David basically said, I believe in this team and I want them to go forward?
Yeah, that's huge. That's what you want to hear from your management. I mean, I think everyone in the room, player-wise and coach-wise, knew we were going to turn it around. We knew we believe in these guys and the core of the team. And it's obviously, sometimes you know that in this salary cap world and all the, I mean, draft picks and everything that can come back, we never know what management would play. But to hear that from the general manager was obviously huge at the time, and we really all just ran with that.
Welcome back, Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road, Mark Howard, talking Preds. That was Matthias Ekholm on
every time I hear Matthias Ekholm, I think of the fact that he got thrown under the bus by Barry Trotz, and that club is probably has two or three members. You never heard Barry Trotz trash a player the way that he did Ekholm after a game in Vancouver. In fact, it sort of necessitated the Predators changing the way that the coach handled his post game because Barry was just too emotional. After that Vancouver game.
Isn't that when he told him to go get a dog?
Yeah, yeah. If you're afraid, go get a dog. And
wow.
And Ekholm.
Trotz said that?
Oh, yeah. was it Ekholm's debut or second game?
It was very early into his career. And if you know Barry, I mean, that is so unlike him. But whatever the case, Ekholm has grown not only to love the organization, but the city and all that. And I think it was unsettling for him when all this trade talk popped up because, frankly, he really didn't want to leave here.
Well, I think it was unsettling for – I mean, certainly some Predators fans at that point were like, you know, blow this up. But Ekholm, one of those guys, not frontline star. He's not Yossi. He's not Forsberg, but – like when you move Ekholm, okay, you are now this is changing permanently, and that means you're going young, and you are going to be a while, right? That's what it represents if you make that move.
And to certain teams, he could have been a first pairing defenseman,
sure.
Definitely a second pairing defenseman, but a guy that you can give a significant amount of ice time to had at least now, a very team-friendly contract. So he was as desirable a player in the trade market as you were going to find. And then all of a sudden, everything changed.
And, of course, you know, he's happy. You know, the players are happy. Players are always happy when the GM stands pat, when the GM doesn't make moves. And like you said, this was a big thing, of course, after the loss to Winnipeg in 2018. The players not just going to David Poile, but going to us, right, going to media and saying, like, we campaigned to keep together, and it happened. And it started going the wrong direction. You know, but it's also not easy to know, you know, how exactly do you retool, how exactly do you rebuild? I mean, we've seen, we were talking last break about the Detroit Red Wings and the glory days. You know, we're still, it's been a while now. That clock is ticking. You know, maybe you're seeing a little light there, but it's been years.
And Joe, you've been covering the sport or sports long enough to know that there are certain markets where the fan base almost needs to be sated sometimes by a trade, because sometimes change for the sake of change,
yeah,
you know, sort of keeps things going.
Well, and honestly, that's part of, it's not like if you got a second round pick for Mikael Granlund, that's not going to be some transformational thing for your organization, yeah, right? I mean, it's one. Now, Roman Josi, you know, you draft him again, okay, but it's one pick. But I think, first of all, I think because you've been buying, at some point you have to go the other way, right? But I do think that's part of it too. What you just said is just people wanting to know, okay, you are thinking about the future. You are thinking about, you know, trying to let's be clever the other way and get some assets and have more coming down the road than has been happening, but it didn't happen. And so to me, I said it before, I'll say it again. I think the Preds need to get in, they're in. I think they need to show well in this series. What that means exactly, I mean, I think they need to win multiple games and be in these games and have a chance to win the series. And then I think they need to sign Mikael Granlund, because I think that he has demonstrated with John Hynes, he instantly became really more the player the Preds thought they were getting when Hynes came in, right? I mean, to me, Granlund's been good. And he's more your future down the middle, the way he's played, I think, maybe than one of the other two guys.
And it's kind of interesting that Granlund, at the same time, might have been part of one of the worst trades David made. Because Fiala
has
blossomed into a legitimate star in Minnesota, but then became one of the better free agent signings for David coming back here. And I think a lot of these guys understand now that they would take less dollars for a good fit. And Granlund is a case in point. For whatever reason, when they first made the trade, I thought it was a good trade.
Oh, yeah.
But for whatever reason, you know, he just did not seem to be comfortable with the way Laviolette used him. But here comes Hynes, and all of a sudden, we see the better side of Granlund. And, yeah, I agree with you. I think that is a really important priority in the offseason to get him back here.
And I don't know that it can be done while paying both Johansson and Duchesne $8 million a year. I mean, that's that's the math that has to be figured out here with Ekholm coming,
yeah,
with some
yeah.
of these other things that you're going to have to do.
I'm convinced that one of the $8 million men will not be here next year.
It's just a matter of, you know, how do you pull that off? Obviously, they're paying $2 million a year to buy out Turris. So a lot of bad moves right now are also part of this equation. But you said last segment, Mark, you think this is one of the least talented teams in the playoff. You know, it's interesting. I think that's true based on how some of those big money guys are producing. But, I mean, on paper, I don't know. I mean, I think it's still a very talented roster. It's a question of what are those guys?
Yeah.
And, right? I mean, it's a question of their production.
And, listen, yeah, sometimes 2 and 2 doesn't equal 4. You look at the Blues. The only difference between the Blues now and the Blues that won the Stanley Cup is Petrangelo's not there. But that seems to be a pretty big deal. And hockey is so chemistry-oriented. It's different from a lot of the other sports. So, the sum of this team doesn't seem to be equal to the talent that they have, the sum of the parts. So that's a tribute to the coaching staff.
Right. And see, that's the thing, though, is like the sum now of the last 2 months all of a sudden has become – the chemistry has been special. So I think there is fool's gold in some of the individuals probably, right? I mean, some of these guys – a couple years from now, we may be, remember him, right? But right now, collectively, they've got something here. And, hey, it's not a bad time to take that into a postseason, right?
You're right. But I also feel like, too, in too many cases, the regular season recedes into the background once the playoffs start. And sometimes you see a totally different thing than you were expecting. Sometimes better, sometimes worse. And I think with the case of the Predators, at least those around the league feel like, yeah, props to them for making the playoffs. But remember who they beat and remember who they couldn't beat. And most feel like reality is going to smack them upside the head.
Yeah, I certainly that could happen. I think one of the big answers or questions there is, of course, the most important player on the ice. We're going to get into that next. And talk about whether something we saw this week might give you a little bit more confidence in this team. When we come back on Robbie and Rex Show, let me let you know first that this season you can catch all the action of Nashville Sounds baseball on ESPN 94.9. Tonight the Sounds face the Memphis Redbirds at First Horizon Park. Catch pregame starting at 6:20 p.m., first pitch at 6:35. Nashville Sounds baseball, ESPN 94.9, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans and 312 Pizza. And a guy of interest, by the way, who is going to be playing for the Sounds tonight.
Yes.
Christian Yelich for a rehab assignment. So that's big time tonight for the Nashville Sounds. Catch that. Check that out, and we will be back here on Robbie and Rex at ESPN 105 The Game. Welcome back, Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road, Mark Howard in for Robbie. Robbie is in the Grand Canyon today. Some beautiful pictures, apparently on Instagram, but some on Twitter too, if you don't do the Insta thing.
Well, hopefully he's at the Grand Canyon and not in the Grand Canyon.
Well, that's true. Well, you can go
in. You don't get great cell reception in the Grand Canyon.
Probably not.
Think of the pictures, though.
I mean... and all the other things that could be down there.
Yeah, yeah. But he's also kayaking, right? What's the it's a famous. I've heard of it. Have you been out there? You done this thing? You done the Grand Canyon thing?
I've been to the Grand Canyon, yes. But my vacations, my criteria used to be a golf course, a casino, and room service.
Nice. I'm pretty much salt water and beverages and sun, you know. But a little glamping, never hurt anybody. But apparently, yeah, they're kayaking. Is it Knee Bend? What is it? Come on. It's something Bend. Someone hit us on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. There's
Horseshoe Bend?
That might be it. So some kayaking, some serious hardcore. Sounds great. I've flown over the Grand Canyon. It looks amazing. Probably good enough, but it sounds fun. So he's out there, and we are here talking about the Preds, getting ready for this series. We know when it starts now. It's Monday in Carolina, game one, and then it's going to be every other day until this thing wraps up. And, look, a huge storyline here, obviously, is going to be UC Saros. He's been in one postseason situation, Mark. I don't know if you count that as a playoffs or not. There's been some debate on this show. I do. It technically counts. But obviously, it was a qualifying round. It was a weird situation, one-time thing in the bubble in Edmonton, and he was average. He was okay. He wasn't good enough. They weren't good enough. But you needed him, I think, to bail them out a couple times that he didn't in that series, and they lost. And so now he's been the best goalie in the league for 2 months here, and I think playing at a sustained level he has not played at, which of course brings up all kind of questions about him, and we'll get into that later. But also this week we see Pekka Rinne, and it's Pecorine night, and it's this amazing moment with him and the fans, and it's a largely AHL kind of game. But still, I thought he was good. I mean, he had some big-time saves. He had some moments, and sometimes the retiring, or we think maybe soon retiring athlete has that magical last night, but I still feel like he can play. Does that game give you any more confidence if Saros runs into trouble here?
That game doesn't. I'm sorry. but that doesn't mean I don't think Pekka could go back in there and play well, because I think that he can. I'm not sure just exactly what to expect if they put Pekka back in there. But, you know, he's been there. He's done that. I think that finally Saros reached the level that everybody has expected him to over the last few years. And I think it's been a moving target. But I think this is an opportunity for Saros. I don't think it's sink or swim for him, but I think it's a huge opportunity. His team is an underdog, but he has clearly played down the stretch like a goaltender who could steal a series for you. And that, as we've seen, can happen in the playoffs. I mean, Preds fans have seen it on, you know, from the other side. You know, the year that Mike Smith got inside their heads to the point where the Preds, you know, couldn't have hit the water from the edge of the dock. and we saw, too, you know, Pekka having some great series. So, you know, it cuts both ways. And I think that is one area where the Preds have an edge over Carolina, even though their goaltending trio is solid. And I don't think the Mrazek, curse over the Predators is really going to, you know, play out in this series. I think the Preds have the advantage in goal, and I think Saros is playing the best hockey of his career.
Yeah, so Sarah Sivian covers the Hurricanes for us at The Athletic. Does a great job. Really covers that team inside and out. Really funny stuff, too, at times. She came out with 10 most important Hurricanes for a first-round victory over the Predators. That's a lot of people you'd expect. But it's interesting. Number one is whoever plays in goal. And, I mean, look, if you're trying to find edges here for the Predators, I mean, I feel like knowing who you've got and knowing he's been the best goalie in the league for, you know, it's not a week or two here. He's sustaining this versus on the other side, like you said, you feel fine going in either any direction, I guess, if you're Rod Brind'Amour. But I feel like, I don't know, the Mrazek thing, that's been my assumption just because of his success against the Preds. I don't know if that game means much in that regard or not. But it's got to give you at least a little bit of pause,
well,
right?
Well, and Mrazek also has playoff experience. Nedeljkovic does not.
Yeah.
So I don't know if Brind'Amour weighs that into the equation. I mean, he played with Cam Ward, who went on the long run and won a cup, and, you know, he was a rookie at the time. So I don't know if that really means anything.
Well, and I don't think the Monday game plays into it at all. Mrazek had Curly, Larry, and Moe playing in front of him. So I don't put that game on him maybe as much as others. But we've seen it before. On both sides, we've seen the team the Predators playing switch goaltenders, and again, it's hit or miss. Carolina is one of those teams that could be changing goaltenders once or twice through the course of the playoffs.
Right. Well, it's funny because Sarah wrote in this piece, it almost might be better if someone's bad early,
yeah,
and gets replaced and said, there you go. You go. Because it happens.
Yes.
It's almost like whoever comes in, if they know that the other guy faltered to so much, they don't have to look over their shoulder anymore. Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that, I'd rather have the situation and goal where I know who's going in, and I know how well he's playing right now.
Well, and then, you remember watching hockey through the years, you know, Mike Keenan becoming the Sparky Anderson, of coaches. You know, Captain Hook, you know, changing goaltenders at the drop of a hat. And I think sometimes for coaches, that can be a bad thing. I think sometimes if you have one guy and only one guy, you're going to sink or swim unless, you know, he gives up eight and you just sit him down for the night and just put him back in there the next game. I think sometimes you can overthink the goalie thing.
I just want to thank you so much for the Sparky Anderson reference, one of my heroes in life.
Manager of the Big Red Machine.
Yeah, he was, but he really, really made it with the Tigers.
Oh, okay, all right.
No, he was great with both. Yeah, Captain Hook, no doubt. Yep. Man, no, actually, I used to complain all the time about Sparky's moves.
At the end of the day with the Hurricanes, though, I don't really think it matters who's in net. If they're playing well in front of them, the goalies are probably going to look good. If they don't play well, then the Preds can probably capitalize on that. I mean, they have won no matter which goalie's been in there, whether it's Mrazek, Nedeljkovic, or even James Reimer.
In the regular season,
yeah,
though,
exactly.
Right? So, I mean, in the regular season. So, I hear you, but you let in one soft goal, you know, and it's like, look, if they play the way they've played, if they can take what they've played, like, for the bulk of this season to the postseason, they might win the cup. I mean, they're that good. But I would like to have a little bit more clarity at that position if I were them, if I were Rob Brindamore. We're going to talk a little bit more about this in terms of Saros himself. Some people think it's on Saros to win this series. Is it that simple? Or is it a little more complicated than that? When we come back on Robbie and Rexrode, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com.